or it's a quiz night.
Put it in the mothership.
Somebody went up there and said he couldn't find it. You could probably get a volunteer. Huh? You could probably get a volunteer.
Are we ready? You think we're ready? Okay. Good evening, everybody. How many of you have been to the Portland City Council to testify before? Raise your hand. All right. On issues like this, where we want to make sure, where there's a lot of passion involved and we want to hear from everybody, but on issues like this, if you like something, then feel free to wave your hands like this. If you don't like something, feel free to put the thumbs down sign. But we try to have as robust of dialogue as possible. And I don't know, it is possible tonight you might hear some things that you don't personally agree with. But because we want to create a safe and accepting place for people to say whatever they have to say, there'll be no clapping, hooting, cheering, no audible, but you're free to participate or give your feedback silently. We're really glad you're here. This is a very important issue. If you signed up, we'll be calling people up in groups of three, and you'll have 3 minutes to speak. Right now, I think we have about 45 people signed up. So that's, we estimate, about 2 hours of testimony. Commissioner Leonard and the auditor also have some invited folks they want to have. They've got some opening comments and some invited testimony as well. If the night, as the night wears on, and if we begin to see hear repeated comments, that's fine. But as the night wears on, I might move from 3 minutes to a shorter time frame, depending on how the evening goes. So that's sort of the general rules of the chamber, trying to be as fair to everyone as possible. Today is Wednesday, March 31st, 2010. It is 6 p.m. We are in evening session of the Portland City Council. Good evening, Carla.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Would you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Adams?
Here. A quorum is present. Please read the title for council ordinance, emergency ordinance, item number 451.
Establish police review board and clarify investigatory powers and complaint handling procedures of the Office of Independent Police Review.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
Thank you, Mayor Adams, members of the council, and welcome to everybody here tonight. This ordinance has been in various stages of being worked on for a number of months, beginning last fall. As those of you that were here a couple weeks ago may recall, at the hearing and subsequent to the hearing, there was some indication by some parts of the community that parts of this ordinance could be challenged in court, parts of this ordinance could have unfair labor practices filed against it. I said at the time, and I'll repeat now, that I think we drafted it in a way to insulate that from happening, but in consultation with the City Attorney's Office and the Bureau of Human Resources, I have some legislative intent I want to read into the record. In describing the ordinance at the March 18th meeting, I do not believe I adequately emphasized a couple of points. First, the changes to IPR's investigative and review power, access to data, and role in the restructured police review board are intended to codify already existing processes, increase the independent participants' voice in the review and recommendation process, and increase transparency and thus public confidence in how those recommendations are arrived at. Second, the changes do not grant to the board or IPR the ability to charge employees with misconduct or propose discipline, nor do they alter the level or imposition of discipline itself. The chief and commissioner in charge retain full authority to determine the facts for the purpose of charging employees with misconduct, propose discipline, conduct due process meetings, and make a final decision on disciplinary sanctions, if appropriate. Nor do the changes alter the standard of review for discipline, which remains just cause. These changes are about creating an accountable review and recommendation process. Lastly, we have made alterations to the ordinance as first introduced in response to the procedural concerns that were raised to ensure that we can move forward with this action without violating any statutory or contractual bargaining obligations. To be clear, one, these changes do not delegate to IPR the ability to participate in the management of the day-to-day functions or administration of the Portland Police Bureau. Two, these changes do not delegate to the IPR the ability or responsibility of charging employees with misconduct or taking disciplinary action. Three, IPR must comply with existing provisions of the city's labor agreements. Four, there is no intent to change existing protocols or policies regarding background checks, discipline, employee confidentiality, and employees' right to be present during the case presentation of review board or employee right to representation provisions. Five, all those involved in the police review board are to receive training regarding police bureau policies and procedures, public employee discipline, and other relevant legal requirements. Thank you, Mayor Adams. We have a list of invited guests, the first of which I would like to invite is the Chief of the Portland Police Bureau, Rosie Sizer.
Now, Rosie is not feeling well, and she's come in for to make these remarks, and I understand you're going to go back to your sick bed.
Thank you. My name is Rosie Sizer, and I'm Portland's Chief of Police. I'd like to begin my remarks by thanking Commissioners Amanda Fritz and Nick Fish for their leadership in ensuring that the hearing of this ordinance was extended into today. I think you can see by the number of changes to the ordinance that have been made over the past week, some of them just hours ago, that the ordinance was not ready for a vote when it was first heard. I find that the process that was used to bring this ordinance forward to you to have been, at the very least, unseemly, at the worst, deplorable. Clearly, there were elements that needed to be bargained with labor associations that weren't. Clearly, the Bureau of Human Resources was not consulted. And clearly, the Portland Police Bureau, whose disciplinary process is affected by the ordinance, was purposely kept in the dark. So much so that prior to the first hearing, the IPR director and her assistant were ordered by the auditor not to discuss with members of the Police Bureau, including the members of the Internal Affairs Division with whom they communicate daily, any aspects of the proposal. What is left today is, near as I can tell, a rather curious mixture. Many of the provisions I have no objection to at all. Some of it codifies processes that are already in place. Much of it augments the authority of the IPR director, who, by the way, has yet to exercise all of the authority that she currently holds. And finally, it changes the composition of the police review board, an advisory board to me as chief of police, that undercuts the roles of managers in the police bureau from actually managing the organization. I won't plow old ground by commenting on the elements of the ordinance that do not seem to have survived to today and a more inclusive process, however belated it was. I would like to point to a couple elements that survived and to language that was forwarded to me this afternoon. One of it has to do with the citizen members of the police review board and that they be nominated by the auditor and confirmed by city council. The current citizen members of the review boards have been selected by the chief of police. They are an incredibly talented lot, and they include Gwen Baldwin, a government relations consultant, Patricia Tenike, executive director of Habitat for Humanity of Oregon, David Denneke, attorney and shareholder of Haring Long, Gary and Rudnick, Anita Noble, program manager for Girl Scouts Behind Bars, and Tom Markgraf, transportation consultant and former staff to Congressman Earl Blumenauer. It is unclear to me what was wrong with the process that resulted in the selection of these fine individuals. What I have left to infer from the change being proposed is either that the auditor has a very different kind of person in mind, or somehow that these individuals' participation is stained by their selection by the chief of police. Since the review board makes recommendations to me, shouldn't its members be people for with whom I have a modicum of confidence? And how would you feel if you or your bureau directors had absolutely no role in the selection of citizens who advise you and them on important matters? Further, it mystifies me why in this time of great scarcity, we have an ordinance that requires the police bureau to hire someone or a panel of people to serve as non-voting facilitators for the police bureau, for the police review board. As you can recall from the budget hearing yesterday, the city of Portland is poised to lay off police officers for the first time in two decades. I do not feel the case has been made to justify this expenditure in this economic climate. On the matter of the review board, if the auditor feels I am not given adequate information on which to base my discipline decisions, the IPR director could just provide additional information. The IPR director could, on her own, have a police review board. She could have it facilitated by whomever she wants, place whomever she wants on it, and make recommendations to me. I assure you I would consider any recommendations made to me. When IPR was created in 2001, it was done so after great thought and careful crafting under then city auditor Gary Blackmer. The original independent review ordinance is not perfect, but it's pretty darn good. It has been held up as a national model that has been distinguished by the results it has achieved and the level of collaboration that has existed between the Portland Police Bureau and its overseers at IPR. The collaboration and the hard work of many in the Portland Police Bureau have resulted in over 40% reduction in internal affairs complaints over the last 5 years, a greater than 50% reduction in use of force complaints in the same time period, and changes to the Bureau's use of force policy, training, and practices, changes that are ongoing. I know that the community wants change. I have spent the last 4 years making thoughtful, incremental change. I have made changes that usually come only through the process of a consent decree, like we have seen in Los Angeles or Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm committed to additional changes that make sense and produce results. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. I hope you feel better.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Adams. If we could call Auditor LaVon Griffin-Vallade, Mary Beth Baptista, and Constantine Severe as the next panel. And Mayor Adams, just kind of procedurally here, we do have some amendments, including on the deletion of one of the attachments. I'll move them now, and then
part of the debate.
LaVon will describe them in detail afterwards. So I would move.
Who else has amendments up here? You do? Okay.
So before we get to those, I just want to make sure I have the most current packet.
I do too. It was on our desk.
Looks like this.
So it's the one that's highlighted?
That's it.
Okay.
That's it. So I would move to replace the ordinance Exhibit A and Exhibit C as illustrated in the paper copies presented and eliminate Exhibit B altogether.
Second.
What's Exhibit B?
Exhibit B.
Expeditious investigations.
Expeditious investigations, did you say?
I did.
Okay. All right. Is that a
Seconded.
It's been moved and seconded. discussion on council. Can someone quickly just summarize what the purpose of the motion is?
To delete expeditious investigations.
Each of the
you should talk about that too, though.
Yes.
So we will. Could I just say a few words and or
welcome that,
and then I'll turn it over to Mary Beth and Constantine to really answer those questions about the
changes. So the amendments are on the floor, and you're explaining what the amendments are.
Yes.
And I should tell you that these amendments are the result of discussions we've had with the City Attorney's Office, BHR, countless outreach programs that the Auditor's Office and IPR has done in the last 2 weeks.
So I want to explain how these did not happen in a vacuum. First of all, good evening. LaVon Griffin-Vallade, City Auditor. And here with me this evening is Mary Beth Baptista, who is the Director of IPR, and Constantine Sevier, who is the Assistant Director. So we are here to finish a very important discussion that started on May 18th in this chamber. We have the same goals brought forth then to protect and strengthen civilian oversight authority, enhance police accountability, and improve community policing efforts. Over the course of the last 2 weeks, we have spent many, many hours in meetings with city labor attorneys, police bureau members and managers, the Human Rights Commission and Community and Police Relations Committee, and other community members, council members and staff, and Bureau of Human Resources labor relations managers, not to mention several hours of revision and review by Mary Beth, Constantine, and other... I'm sorry.
Over just a little closer to you.
Okay. Sorry. You'd think the oldest of five kids, I'd still have this really loud voice, but I'm sorry that I don't. Sorry. So in addition to all of those members of the community and the Bureau and council and staff, Mary Beth, Constantine, other IPR staff, and the City Attorney's Office put in several hours of revision and review. We have heard and taken seriously the concerns and comments of the many stakeholders involved. The amended ordinance and the 12-page list of amendments to exhibits before you reflect our response to those conversations. We appreciate everyone's thoughtful comments and recommendations. The document and the proposed changes have been made stronger because of those comments, and we really could not ask for more than that. Before I turn this over to Mary Beth and Constantine to walk you through the amendments, I want to express my thanks for the work they have put into this effort and the extra assistance provided by Stephanie Harper and Lindley Rees of the City Attorney's Office. Everyone went above and beyond the call. Finally, I would like to thank all of the community members who presented such compelling testimony on the 18th or are here tonight to do so, or who came forward to express their support and agreement with this timely and significant proposal. I would like to also thank those who took the time to show their support for our work, but wanted to respectfully tell me of their disagreement with this proposal. It is important that in a civil society, we are able to honorably disagree and continue to respect and show respect for those we disagree with. So without further ado, turn it over to Mary Beth. And I don't know if we want to do this in a question and answer format.
Before we do that, usually what we do is we adopt the amendment, and then the amendment's on the floor, and then we have discussions. And, of course, adopting the amendment doesn't adopt the ordinance. It just puts the items being proposed before us for discussion. So I think it's probably appropriate at this time to adopt the amendment.
I would like to hear the changes first.
Okay.
Because they're they're extensive, but...
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, so I'm prepared to do that. I'm going to take the changes to exhibit list, A, B, and C, that you've all been provided. It has today's date on it, and I think it's probably easiest if I just go through that, if that's agreeable to everyone.
That this?
That's yes. It, yes.
Just other copies available for... folks here?
Yes.
First, I want to give some background on how these amendments were made and how these changes were made. As both the auditor and the commissioner have stated, Assistant Director Constantine Sevier and I spent several hours with several different groups over the course of the last 9 or 10 days, including a public meeting that was coordinated by the Human Rights Commission. I think that was also important because when we talk about things that are of community concern, there were several members of the Bureau that were there that were able to hear firsthand what I am talking about when I say that there's community concern. And so I think that that was really helpful to have that meeting. We also spent several hours of meetings. I met with each of the assistant chiefs together in a meeting. Constantine and I also met with the Bureau command staff and the leadership of the PPCOA. We also met with and spent several hours working with the Bureau of Human Resources and the City Attorney's Office. And I, too, want to thank the City Attorney's Office for the amount of time. I had no idea the significant workload that was going to be imposed on them based on this ordinance, if both the attorneys and their staff. And so I want to make sure we thank them and acknowledge their hard work on this and their positive attitude as well, which was very helpful. The input of these stakeholders are the basis of the following changes that have been made to the ordinance. There are some things that are just housekeeping things that are repeated throughout. I think it was important that we use language that actually is representative of what we are trying to do and what we're trying to clarify. So you'll see that there's several areas where we just simply by adding the word recommended in front of findings or discipline really did help to clarify what our intent was and what it is that we're seeking to do. So there's several of those amendments that just really involve adding some of that clarifying language, which you'll see here on the first page. Some of the more substantive, you'll see on Exhibit A, page 1 of 7, from the ordinance 320-140-B1-C2. I don't know if we want to continue to have me do the numbers, but I will. This change was made directly based on the meeting that we had with the assistant chiefs. There was concern about the lack of real definition of what bodily injury is and what medical treatment is. And there was concern about how many automatics would be flooding the board and flooding that workload. And so we changed it back to the standard of physical injury, which actually has a legal definition that requires hospitalization, which currently has a working definition at the Bureau. This doesn't change the substance of what we can still do because we can controvert something and send it to the board if we feel like there's an issue there, but it's just to take care of how many cases that are automatically going there. The next change, when we wrote less than lethal, that was not there was a significance with the word than that we didn't intend, so less lethal incidents is what we intended. The next, Exhibit A, page 1 of 7, 320-140-B1-D, This came from our meeting with BHR. This is about the EEOC claims. We did not want to disrupt their work and their processes, so we've incorporated that into the ordinance. A very significant change that was made based on all of the stakeholders that we met with, which is Exhibit A, page 2 of 7, 320-140-B3, was the removal in this portion of the code of discipline guidelines. This was made clear to us that this was a significant concern, and what we've done to preserve what we wanted and the changes that we sought was we now have that in the ordinance as an area that we will be doing, that council will, if adopted, be directing us to do further study on for adoption at a later date after bargaining concerns and input from the Bureau and Bureau of Human Resources has been made. So we still...
Where is that one again?
It's...
Two?
The bottom of page 1 is where it starts. It's Exhibit A, page 2 of 7, and it's 320-140-B3.
Okay.
So
where is that now in the ordinance?
Really?
So in the ordinance, it's been moved to... Subsection, under council directs, it's now subsection E. And it is accurately, what our intent was, is still preserved and accurately reflected in that subsection E. So we were just able to move it to where it's more appropriately handled. The next on Exhibit A, page 2 of 7, this is regarding the composition of the board. Our intent was to balance the board, to have more citizen-civilian participation in balance with the amount of Bureau representation there is. However, based on my conversation with the assistant chiefs, I learned that it's a really great training tool for them to be present during the boards, that it's a key element to their supervisory work. And so since our intent was just to balance the board when it comes to voting, we certainly saw their point and added them in as advisory members so they can still participate in the board. And it doesn't affect what our goal was, which was the balancing of the citizen and bureau involvement. The next portions here are regarding, again, the police review board. There was significant concern from the assistant chiefs as well as the union that we didn't put in the provisions regarding confidentiality and criteria for selecting those members or removing those members. And our intent was to allow the current directive that defines that that criteria to continue, but based on advice from the city attorney, we've just added that language here that we will develop a bureau, the bureau and IPR will work together to develop a directive setting forth those critical criteria confidentiality issues. Also, based on the conversations with the assistant chiefs, we've added back that the chief will have the authority to recommend to city council the removal of citizen members along with the auditor. We certainly did not intend to exclude the bargaining units or the involved members from the performance from the police review board as revised. In fact, our hope is that as it's revised, there will be more participation from the bureau member and the bargaining units. Again, this was just an oversight, and we were happy that they brought this to our attention, and we had no problem adding them back in. There was also concerns about what a quorum would be, so we did some housekeeping there and followed basically the status quo of what the Bureau has regarding quorum in their directive and just codified it here. Again, we see some repeats of language of physical injury as well as less lethal. Again, another area that was brought to our attention regarding from the ACs as well as the union. Our intent was clearly to have the board be more inclusive. I'm on page 3. Page 3, Exhibit A, page 4 of 7, 32140D1A. We wanted to be more inclusive with the members. We did not mean to exclude the advisory members from having access to information, so we just took out the word voting. And that more accurately reflects our intent. Again, there was concerns regarding the confidentiality provisions, since we put some protections back in there to develop a directive. Exhibit A, 4 of 7, 32140D2. We just clarified the language here to more accurately reflect what our intent was, and that is that it's a recommendation of findings, a disposition recommendation to the board. And again, this is an area that, going back to what the commissioner was talking about managing the day-to-day operations, there's currently a very good process for distributing information and making sure that the members are advised on a timely matter and have access to that information. And so we're not trying to interfere with those day-to-day processes of providing that information. The next, on the bottom of page 3, and then it continues to page 4, Exhibit A, it's Exhibit A on page 4 of 5, 4 and 5 of page 7 in that exhibit, 32140E1A and B. This is regarding the facilitator of the board. We have heard that that there was concern about...
Excuse me, where are you right now?
I'm on page 4 of the outline.
We're on page...
The very top of page 4, A and B.
Okay. We have a different... So are you on E1, A and B?
Yes, I'm on A and B.
That's at the bottom of our page 3. So if you could...
It also goes over to page 4. If you
right.
Over.
So if you could stick with the numbers, that'd be great.
She's using the same sheet.
She is?
She just flipped over.
Okay.
Yes, so it starts on the bottom of page...
Starts on the bottom.
Bottom of page 3, and then the changes are on page 4.
Thank you.
Again, we address the concerns of the PPCOA and the assistant chiefs without losing the intent of what it is that we wanted to do, which was to have a facilitator for the board We've just provided those protections for establishing selection criteria and confidentiality provisions, and the manner in which a facilitator would be chosen. So it's still the same intent that we originally had. It's just language that's been clarified to help with those other concerns. Again, we've added in the next two portions just clarifying language of what our intent was regarding recommended findings and recommendations. And setting forth criteria and for timeliness provisions. I think the next major change that isn't a repeat or just obvious clarifications is on page 5 of our outline. And that's regarding Exhibit A, and it's the 32140 H4A, B, and C. This is another, this is another area where based on concerns that we heard from all of the stakeholders we talked about, that the intent of the language was to work on establishing timelines. And so the language that's here, the same provisions and intent of that language has now been moved into the ordinance, which is in the direction subsection F. So the same intent of making sure that we develop those develop those timelines and have timeliness case handling is now accurately reflected in subsection F of the ordinance. Thank you.
So moving on to page 5.
So moving on to
page six
of the outline. Again, we discussed in Exhibit B that we deleted that as an exhibit, and it's more accurately reflected in the ordinance on subsection E. Just some clarifying language of what a finding is. And then moving on to the middle of the page, Exhibit C, 320.3.21070D, we just added some clarifying language to say that IPR is doing the administrative investigation and that the administrative investigations will be conducted in accordance with the human resources rules regarding the process of those EEOC complaints.
So the distinction between internal and administrative is what?
Well, it didn't seem internal when IPR was doing it. And so it's an administrative investigation that is done, meaning a non-criminal investigation that is done at IAD, but they call it an internal investigation. So it seems to be more appropriate language to call it administrative. And it also draws that distinction that's important between having it being an administrative versus a criminal investigation.
So, but the difference between the change on the couple lines down from internal to administrative, what's the distinction between internal and administrative?
Internal affairs does an administrative investigation. They just call it internal. So we basically used slang that we shouldn't have.
Thank you.
The next section also talks about administrative, having it more appropriate language, and recommendations. The very bottom of page 6, the subsection M, there was concern that we were going to be releasing reports regarding specific member misconduct. That was never our intent, so we clarified that. To say that it's trends of misconduct that we'll be reporting on. Top of page 7, this was also an area that was significant concern to all of the stakeholders involved, that we would be codifying in the city code and ORS based on those concerns with all that we met with, including community members, by the way, on this topic. That was removed. Obviously, the ORSs will still exist whether we codify them or not. Okay, and again, another area, still on page 7, Exhibit C, Section 321.120B3A and B. Again, this goes back to what we're talking about with the administrative. All stakeholders that we talked to, including community members, wanted more clarification on this point. And that it's important that we talk about how we're not in the business of engaging in criminal investigations here, nor is it our intent to interfere with criminal investigations. So the city attorney and I worked very closely on this language kind of gave me a flashback from law school for a few minutes, which was a little bit concerning for me. But this is the language that we came up with that made sure that we were reflecting accurately that we're not going to engage in criminal investigations and that we will take all steps necessary to meet the constitutional requirements and comply with existing conditions when it comes to if there is a criminal investigation currently ongoing. You'll be happy to know that the majority of the next several pages are just housekeeping that are pretty self-explanatory, things that we missed and others caught. It's clear that there's just some language that needed to be changed to more accurately reflect our intent and LaVon's intent to always be grammatically correct. So we've made those changes. Most of those on page, all of those on page 8 are that. Of that vein.
So, sorry.
Yes.
Exhibit C9 of 22321120B3A and B on page 7. The B says, if a criminal investigation has been initiated against the involved member and goes on, is that new or is that just...
This is new language that's put in these amendments.
Is it new authority or new clarification of the authority... If a criminal investigation is initiated on an individual that you're doing an administrative investigation on?
Yes, this is new language to clarify how we would go about exercising the authority given to us in subsection 3.
And what is that new substantive authority?
No, it clarifies how we
would do it.
How we would do it. So basically, there was concern about whether or not. The authority is IPR can initiate an administrative investigation. That's the authority. That's the authority that was in the original ordinance. This is clarifying what the procedures would be if there was a criminal investigation that was ongoing while IPR initiated that, or if IPR were to uncover potential criminal allegations, what we would do with it.
What is it?
And so what we would do is we would advise the city attorney and or district attorney immediately before initiating an administrative investigation or continuing to conduct an administrative investigation and take all steps necessary to meet those constitutional requirements and comply with the provisions of city labor agreements. Meaning we don't want to affect the criminal case by having IED compel testimony or having an external investigation done by IPR compelled statements that then couldn't be used in the criminal court. So we would have to make sure that we were all on the same page to protect the integrity of that investigation.
Thank you.
And how did this change get made? I mean, in discussions with...
Oh, yeah, we had discussions with the assistant. I'm not sure if this came up with the assistant chiefs, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, but it certainly came up with the PPCOA and with the city attorney's office.
So the legislative intent here is to not put at risk any criminal inquiry.
Absolutely, yes.
That has precedence.
Yes. And provides protections to diminish that risk. Like I said, the page 8 is primarily housekeeping, as well as page 9. However, the very bottom of page 9, subsection F321120F, and it continues onto the top of page 10. I can't be sure because the PPA attorney didn't identify which areas he thought were constitutional violations. But I did have conversations with the city attorney about this particular provision and whether or not the way it was originally written may have raised some double jeopardy concerns. So we wrote it to more accurately reflect what our intent was in the first place, and that was that this type of case, the Type 4 case, could be sent back for further investigation or additional investigation just as any other case type did. And so the way that we wrote it had the unfortunate side effect of making it look like it was presenting some sort of double jeopardy argument that we certainly didn't intend. So we worked with the city attorney's office to clarify that language. Again, in the next...
Water, you
two subsections of on page 10, G2 and G3. Again, this was based on concerns that we heard from the Bureau, from BHR, and from the union, that we unintentionally used language that didn't accurately reflect what we were trying to communicate, and that is that we are discussing recommended findings and proposed discipline. So we just made sure, I just did a find and replace, and made sure we put recommend in front of findings and proposed in front of discipline. That's always what our intent was, and so now the language just more accurately reflects that. And the next page is exactly that. If you look on page 11, you'll see many highlights of recommend. You'll also see some deletions of timeframes, and that's based on the expeditious investigation being removed from the code but being put into the ordinance instead. And finally, on page 12, I think this was the other area of concern that was raised by the PPA attorney. It was certainly raised by the PPCOA and Bureau membership and leaders, as well as community members who were concerned about this provision. I'm talking about the subpoena provision, Exhibit C, 321-210. Our intention with the subpoena provision from the beginning was that to be used on people who were not able to be compelled to testify through an IAD liaison. It was never our intention to be using subpoenas on sworn Bureau members that are employed by the Bureau and that are under the Bureau's direction to cooperate with administrative investigations. So this was clearly a concern, and we put in some language that, through various voicemails, actually, I put together from members of the PPCOA, actually used that language. This was always our intent. We thought we were clear in our other areas that we would be using IAD liaisons to compel that testimony, but it doesn't hurt to add a couple sentences here, because clearly this is what we intended. We intend to use subpoenas when we need civilians that won't come in to testify, when we need records that can't otherwise be given to us without a subpoena, and so that's more accurately reflected here. And that's all the amendments we have.
I'm still not clear where the expeditious review ended up.
The expeditious review. So,
well, you said you placed it in the ordinance, and I'm looking at the ordinance, and see that.
And I would suggest you need to go through the changes in the ordinance.
Okay, I'll do that. So. I'll do that next. So what our intent was with the expeditious investigations was that we would work with the Bureau to establish timelines, because clearly we heard from both Bureau members as well as community members that the amount of time that things take to get done is of concern. So based on advice from the city attorney's office and after having conversations with representatives from the Bureau, it's more legally more appropriate, apparently, for it to be in this ordinance. To have council direct us to work on these issues. And so that's what we've done. So if you look on the second page.
And where are we at in the ordinance?
There's only two pages as far as I know. So if you look on the second page.
Of the actual ordinance.
Of the actual ordinance. And you look at subsection F. It says the Portland Police Bureau and the Independent Police Review Division are directed to confer with each other and impacted labor organizations regarding proposed timelines introduced at the March 18, 2010 council meeting. Following conferral, the Bureau of Human Resources shall provide notice and bargain about the timelines that are mandatory for bargaining. The same issue arose about the guidelines. And our intent was, in the original language, was to work together to develop these guidelines to be later adopted by council. And so if you look at right above that subsection I just read in subsection E, it says the Portland Police Bureau, Independent Police Review Division, and the Bureau of Human Resources are directed to research, consult with impacted labor organizations, and develop discipline guidelines consistent with the Bureau of Human Resources administrative rules for use in making discipline recommendations to the chief and return with a recommendation to council. So what's important is that our intent when we wrote this was to accomplish exactly this. And so nothing has been lost about what our original intention is. It's just more appropriately put in this context, in this language, and in this place in the ordinance.
So Mayor, may I ask a couple questions?
What?
Can we get
about this particular provision?
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, yeah, we're talking just about the ordinance.
Right.
And I'm trying to keep track of all the different versions here, but the original version in Section 4 had a severability clause. Where is that now?
It's still there. If you look further down, it's still Section 4.
So it's not in the copy that I...
It's what you were handed out.
The ordinance didn't have a severability clause. Huh? The original ordinance didn't have a severability clause.
That's
we
been
added.
Added.
Yeah.
That's been added.
That's the new Section 4 at the end. And for those who are in the audience, the severability clause, it says, council declares that if any section, subsection, sentence, clause, or phrase of this ordinance or the code amendments it adopts is for any reason found to be invalid or unconstitutional, that shall not affect the validity of the remaining portions of the code. So in other words, if there are particular problems with particular pieces, the rest of it still stands, and that's a really important addition. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you, because in one of my earlier versions, it wasn't, but it's now in Section 4, and that was something that a number of stakeholders raised.
That's right.
Wanted to make sure that if there was a legal challenge, it would not, in effect, prevent implementation of all the other provisions that have not been declared invalid. So that's set. And then I just want to clarify under Section 3 of the ordinance, the core provisions here in 3.21 and 3.20.140, which you've walked us through, those are effective 30 days from the effective date of the ordinance. So even though this is an emergency ordinance, they don't kick in for 30 days to give folks the time to work out the language.
And we also need time to be able to make the adjustments in-house as well.
Okay, but nonetheless, it's an emergency ordinance, so it has all the other characteristics of an emergency ordinance. But we're making clear that it kicks in 30 days from adoption. Okay, thank you.
The new Section 6 of Section 1, subsection 6 of Section 1, says the council's intent is that employment investigations and subsequent disciplinary actions regarding police officers employed by the City of Portland occur in an expeditious fashion. Did you really mean employment investigations?
That should actually probably say administrative investigations rather than employment.
So I move that amendment.
Consider that a friendly.
Yep. Are you okay with that?
And Commissioner Leonard, I assume that your motion for the amendment included the substitute ordinance.
It did.
Thank you.
Any other discussion?
So with that change, the city attorney got that on.
All right. Are you done with your...
Unless you all have any other questions about the ordinance or the amendments.
All right. Any other discussion from council on the motion to amend and substitute? Carla, would you please call the vote on the motion to amend and substitute?
Fritz?
Well, everyone just sat through a very long discussion and a lot of details, and I believe that these changes make it stronger, that they make it much clearer, and that they will make this ordinance be able to be effective. And they remove some of the language which could have caused problems. So I greatly appreciate the time that you have to and the effort that you have taken to put in to talk to folks in the community. This also responds to some of the community feedback we heard 2 weeks ago. So thank you very much for doing this. Aye.
Fish.
In addition, I want to thank the auditor and the director for the courtesies they extended to each of the commissioner's offices last week in reviewing the proposal and your proposed changes and walking us through it. This is a very complex matter, and I very much appreciate the care that you've given this, but in the spirit of maintaining the integrity of the proposal but strengthening it. So I pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
I appreciate you taking the time to walk through with us tonight, and also, as Commissioner Fish noted, your willingness to sit with my office and explain in even deeper background some of the reasons for some of these changes. I, too, think it makes for a better ordinance. Aye. All right.
Thank you. Amendments.
We have more amendments.
I guess I'd like to propose four amendments, and I'll hand those out right now. and explain them.
Do you have a copy for the auditor?
Yeah. So the First Amendment is to, in the spirit of the changes that have been made between March 17th and today about the police chief having the ability to have a say in excluding members from the performance police review board, my First Amendment says that the auditor and the police chief shall also select the citizen review members that are then approved. The police review board members.
Can I just ask a procedural question? Are you proposing this as one amendment or a series of separate amendments we'll vote on separately?
They're separate amendments.
Okay.
So I just thought I'd just get them out now.
So you want to describe them, all them together, and then
we'll
go back each of them individually?
Okay. So in essence, the First Amendment would say that both the auditor and the police chief will select members of the police, public members of the police review board subject to council ratification. The Second Amendment clarifies the auditor on March 17th said that the facilitation cost should not exceed $10,000.
Estimated $10,000. I think that was a blind estimate, frankly.
This amendment would simply say that the Bureau is responsible for any cost estimated with the facilitation of the board up to $10,000 per fiscal year. And I think the reason for this is... As the chief stated, this is, we are trying to prevent laying off officers. We're also aggressively trying to recruit more minority officers. And to the extent that the costs are contained here, that lets us work on those other objectives. And I think if the costs go beyond that, that's something that the full council should consider how to fund. So that's
so is this the cost of facilitation for all the board's work for a year or each case?
All the board's work for a year.
That's a low number.
Well, and I think it's low in part because the board meets twice a month, and the time span can vary, and sometimes they don't even meet that often. So that's kind of what the initial basis for it was. But it neglected to take into account the fact that the facilitator is also going to be responsible for doing some write-up of the decisions.
We're not 10,000. I mean, my opinion based on procuring a lot of facilitation services over the years is this is low by a factor of at least two or three.
Well, I would just have to point out something that's probably obvious to most people is that to try to somehow limit the cost of a facilitator to adjudicate the proper administration of justice to a police officer pales in comparison to the hundreds of thousands of dollars we pay in settlements for officer misconduct just since I've been on the council from 2002 till now. Mm-hmm. And if anybody wants to hear me go through those, I have a list of misconduct cases and the hundreds of thousands of dollars we paid.
I think the point of my amendment is if the costs do exceed $10,000, that becomes a larger question for the city council to fund because the Bureau is in the process of looking at layoffs and we're in the process of trying to hire more diverse police.
I understand the desire to be planful in budgeting. I won't be able to support this amendment, but I think as part of the normal course of budget requests that the Bureau will ask for as a line item the resources necessary to achieve this, or we can make the resources available through the auditor's budget, but I can't support. Okay. This would hem in. This would, as Commissioner, I agree with Commissioner Leonard's statement.
I feel very strongly that this is the Bureau's board, and it's a board that's in place now, and I think we've made a compelling case for having a moderator present. It makes it much more objectively run. A neutral moderator will make sure that every concern is heard by every review board member. So I feel very strongly that the moderator be not part of the auditor's budget because this is the Bureau's review board.
Yeah, my intent was if the council needs to put money towards this, it could we could
put it in the Bureau's budget. We could put it in the auditor's budget. I'm fine with, for the first year, it'd be taken out of the Bureau's budget, and then it's just part of the normal budget process. It's going to take a little while for us to figure out, at least a year to figure out what the costs are.
Exactly. Thank you.
Commissioner Salzman, would a different number be acceptable to you, and or could there be a second sentence saying additional resources will be requested from the City Council or from contingency or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
But it's clear the first 10,000 is from the Bureau's budget, and we could when you pull back the request, the Council could at that point say, no, you need to find it in your budget.
He might agree with that. I think that it's part of the normal budget request. I think the Bureau needs to spend the resources necessary for this to be successful. It's going to take us a year. If the Bureau wants to make a request because the costs get way out of hand, they can do so as part of the bump process. I think the safeguards are in place and the protocols are in place to deal with this issue without an artificial floor or ceiling at this point. That's my own personal opinion. You'll be able to make the amendment, and we'll see how it votes out.
The Third Amendment basically says that the board facilitator shall write the statement of recommended findings and discipline and a summary of any training and or investigation issues or concerns on behalf of the board and submit the statement to the chief within 2 weeks of the board meeting date. And again, I think this is in the spirit of expeditious reviews to ensure that the facilitator does, in fact, write up a timely report for the chief. I've spoken to Stephanie Harper, the city attorney, and she assures me that this timeline does not have the same bargaining impacts as the other timelines that are being studied further. So it is simply a limit on the timeliness of internal administrative functions. And then the last amendment deals with the appeal of board recommendations. So this is the IPR's, the Citizen Review Committee. And the current language says the director of IPR or the commissioner in charge may request an expedited hearing by the IPR Citizen Review Committee of an appeal. And I would add in the chief of police to that. So that the director of IPR, the chief of police, or the commissioner in charge may request an expedited hearing of the IPR Citizen Review Committee. So those are my four amendments.
So if I could just give some feedback. It doesn't appear to be a problem. I think that's a great idea. I have a question about E, and I'm very much opposed to C. Just to go one at a time, the one citizen member from a pool of citizen volunteers recommended by the auditor and the chief of police and confirmed by city council. I mean, with all due respect to the chief, this is an effort to provide oversight to a bureau that has unique powers amongst all other city bureaus to take the life of a citizen. And with all respect to the chief, comparing this process to any other bureau is a false comparison because of the tremendous powers that we obviously instill in our officers. So I think at a minimum, if not substantively, at least for appearance sakes, to have the chief of police actually involved in picking people who are going to oversee the investigation of complaints or allegations of misconduct by officers is inappropriate, and I would very much oppose having the citizen panels picked by the chief, even if they were co-picked with the auditor.
Well, my amendment doesn't say picked by the chief; it says picked by the auditor and the chief. And
that's what I said.
Council confirmation.
That's what I said. Even if it's co-picked, I think it's an inappropriate thing to have in an independent review to have the bureau that's being reviewed have a say in who it is that's reviewing them. That's inappropriate. It violates principles of
standards. For those of you that arrived late, sorry, I know we have latecomers. As you see, your colleagues in the galleries are doing a great job of expressing themselves quietly. It's also physical exercise. We don't want any blood clots. This is going to go on a while. Do you have a response to that? Or if not, we're going to move. Do you have a response to the concern presented by Commissioner Leonard?
I think the concern is simply one of fairness. You've already added an amendment that allows the chief and the auditor to decide about removal of citizen members. So why not, in the sense of fairness and parallelism, have the same process in terms of selecting members? I think the chief, in her statement, outlined some of the citizen members who currently serve on the review boards, and they're pretty fine, upstanding people.
Do you have your opinions?
Can I respond to that? So I serve on these boards, and Constantine serves on these boards, and there are, as the chief stated, fine citizens on these boards, absolutely.